Hey, from this bitch of an earth, it's your host, Diana. In this episode, I sat down with Greg again to talk about Dark Souls. It's a series he's always liked and had a lot to say about it. So, as always, sit back and chill. You've earned it. All right, welcome everyone to This Bitch of an Earth. I'm your host, Diana Manassian, and we're here with our first repeat guest, Greg Fernandez.
What's up? I really enjoyed the percussiveness of bitch.
I really felt it this time around. Yeah, it's... Bitch of Living. That's a song from a musical.
Which one?
Let me look it up. I'll look it up later. I'll put it in the description, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe from Annie. It's not from Annie.
Animal crackers up in this bitch.
Shirley Temple would never
That's
cuss.
Shirley Temple, yeah.
Close All enough. All right. What's your topic, Greg? I am merely here to ask questions.
So this time I'm going to be talking about my favorite game of all time, Dark Souls.
Oh, we love that. We love favorites on this show.
So,
get into it.
So, yeah, it's sort of become a meme at this point. Many people who consider themselves enthusiasts kind of, flock to Dark Souls as this sort of, paragon of game design and, respecting the player. And while those things are true, I feel like there's a bunch of ideas that people don't talk about when it comes to how great Dark Souls is. People primarily focus on it's hard and you beat a boss and then you feel good about yourself, but there's so much more there. Much more in this this extremely dark, interesting setting. That's pretty much what I'm talking about. I'm gonna be talking about that other stuff, this is the sticky icky that makes Dark Souls so special to me personally.
If you want to know about the hard stuff and why it's a paragon because it's difficult, go somewhere else.
Yeah.
That's homework assignment.
Those things are definitely there, but it's there's just so much more here. If it was just that, and it's okay, play literally any, early 90s video game where they made the game difficult.
Contra.
Yeah, there's so much more here than that. So to just kind of give a little background. So this is going to kind of seem out of nowhere, but it does make sense. Okay, so I was born and raised Christian for the vast majority of my life.
Oh, we're going way back. Okay.
We're going way back. And so at some point, might have been junior high around that time, or middle school, depending on where you're from, I kind of fell out with the idea. But I never really, I knew God, or knew, quote unquote. I became agnostic, atheist, or whatever around junior high. But I didn't internalize the idea of death until true death until late high school, maybe junior, senior year. And, that shit fucked me up.
As so, it does.
Yeah, so just the idea of non-existence and it was really bad. I remember the first month I barely slept. The second I was left alone with my thoughts, it was just dread. Dread.
So you really went through it.
Yeah, I really went through it.
Oh, fuck.
And because I just had never, one of the weird things is, did I just disconnect?
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I saw my Discord thing go to yellow. Okay.
We're keeping that in there.
So, I remember it's funny because I remember when I was really young and I was thinking about the afterlife. I was thinking, you die and go to heaven and that lasts forever. And I remember I got in a weird way, existential dread about existing forever. And I thought there was like a kind of closure in death. What a dumbass I was. I would love to live forever. That shit would be so sick. But
yeah, but then you gotta watch all of your mortal friends die around you.
Yeah, yeah. Over and they all immortal too. We all getting uploaded to the mainframe, motherfucker.
Oh my god. Alright, so who's vampire patient zero? Who's gonna bite who? And how's that gonna spread? Anyway, yeah. Go on.
And so your boys fucked up. And
in short,
your voice fucked up, and eventually I learned to live with it. You know, I can sleep now.
Proud of
you. And then I find this game that I actually looked up, and it came out in America on my birthday, September 22nd, 2011.
Happy Dark Souls birthday, was released.
Yeah. Dark Souls was released to America, and I actually didn't know about it. I don't remember exactly what year I played it, but it was probably like a year or two after. I heard about it because I followed game trailers, and they kind of have like a pulse on like obscure Japanese games. And so I remember in 2009, I believe that's when Demon Souls came out, they gave that their game of the year. And if I remember correctly, 2009 was a stacked year. So I heard about this game, this Demon Souls thing. And as with many like cult classics, people kind of jump in on the sequel. And that's what Dark Souls is. Dark Souls is the sequel to Demon's Souls. So I played Dark Souls, and you know, you go through the classic story of you're playing through the game, you're doing the tutorial, and boss fight in the tutorial. And one of the reasons that's so brilliant is because it sets the pace for the rest of the game, and you kind of understand what you're getting yourself into. Mm-hmm. And this kind of goes into one of the first great things about Dark Souls design is how it manages the difficulty. Because, for example, if I play your standard AAA, like, shoot 'em up, third-person shooter, whatever, and I have to, like, I die and I have to, like, restart a section, I get super pissed. And I get annoyed. But in Dark Souls, that's the name of the game. And the way they manage to do that is by managing expectations. Dark Souls does an amazing job of setting the tone and remaining there for the entire for the entire thing. So they start off with the boss fight. It's too hard. You have to find a creative solution to actually defeat the boss fight. And then from there, you die, you die, you die, you die. And if you don't drop off, you know, in the first hour, then you don't, the rest of the game is also just like that. But, and so one of the interesting things that, the way this ties back to the idea of death is that Dark Souls is all about true death and what life means, you know, all that sort of fun existential shit. And so the general story of the game is you die, so, you know, you die for the first time, your first death, and then you wake up and you realize you're some sort of weird zombie thing and you have like a curse of some kind. And generally people don't like that, and they ship away all the zombie people to this fucked up land called Lordran. And the game actually starts with you just being in a prison. They just, like, locked away all the undead people. And what ends up happening is that you die and you kind of, like, lose a little bit of yourself. And as you continue to die and you get more frustrated, you slowly wither away. And the only thing that can keep you going is either purpose or hope, something to kind of continue to fight for. And so Dark Souls does one of my favorite things that has been been kind of overdone to death, so it's now no longer one of my favorite things, is using story to justify game mechanics. This is one of the first games that like really went hard into that. And so the fact that you know, come back after dying is canon. And the enemies around you, the vast majority of the enemies are game, are hollow. And hollow are people who have completely given up and become mindless husks. And so what hollow are effectively other people who have played the game and either rage quit or just gave up out of frustration. So the entire world is filled with...
Wait, is that a real thing?
Yes.
Oh,
I didn't know this. Yeah, so symbolically, like, all the zombie guys you fight, like, they're wearing similar clothes than you, like, when you're starting off, and, like, and they're supposed to represent, like, other players who have given up and are...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and I remember when I first heard that, when I first figured it out, because that's one of the other... I'll go into that later. When I first figured it out, I was like, oh my fucking God. And that's what really made the world start to feel alive for me. And once you kind of get one, like, and then that concept, you think about it more. So it's like the entire game is just it's almost like some sort of like self-torture. Like the entire game is about how much abuse you can take and continue to move forward, because this game is fucking sad. Like, there's like, you know, everyone thinks about, you know, The Last of Us or like your standard like narrative driven games for like, you know, how sad they can be at times, but like Dark Souls is bleak. There is very little joy, and what winds up happening is that it creates, there's these few moments of genuine joy that like shine so brightly, because everything else is just awful and terrible. Pretty much all the NPCs you meet in the game are gonna backstab you at some point. They're lying to you. They have their own goals, their own agendas. They will do terrible things if you let them. And then there are these few, probably like four or five, that you'll meet who are genuinely good people who are in a bad situation. And as you sort of follow them throughout their journey, things just keep getting worse for them, and everyone has a bad ending. And so these few nice people like become your friends, because the entire world is garbage and everyone else you meet is garbage, and these few people you become so close and so bonded to, and you know that there's like nothing you can really do for them except try to sort of push on in your own sort of way, whatever your goal is just kind of keep moving. And it's real rough. This game is like, if you can like sit there and and you like actually, you know, find all the NPCs and talk to them and kind of like try to advance their plot lines, it's brutal, man. It's Yeah, and so this entire game effectively just becomes that, just this sort of like test of your perseverance and like what, it became like, as you can probably see where this is going, very reflective of how I kind of was at the time, and trying to figure out like what is the, because like, as with most people who become, you know, secular or like, you know, agnostic or whatever, it's like,
yeah.
Nihilism, bam. just get kicked in the head with nihilism. And Dark Souls is ultimately about perseverance, because like, sure, the entire world is bleak and everyone has a bad ending, but it's about you overcoming all of these things and seeing how much you can take and being surprised at how strong you are. That's what really makes, you know, when you beat the boss fight and you feel relief, that's what really does it, man. And there's just like so many, just I always tell the story. So probably the most famous place in Dark Souls is Blighttown. It is this it's either Blighttown or Onalando, but probably it ran poorly in the PlayStation 3 version. There was just like so much going on, enemies flying at you, and it's just this hellish underground swamp of poison and death and insects, and honestly kind of looks like shit everywhere. And the way the game is structured at first is there's no like jumping around, there's no teleporting at all. So you have a goal to go down into Blighttown, and Blighttown's pretty big, and so you're going through it, and you could, especially on your first playthrough when you're dying a bunch, you could spend like 5-10 hours going down into Blighttown. And I remember
hours.
Yeah, if you die a lot, like
11 for me.
I mean, it's a big area. It's not like one stage. It's like there's a couple bosses. And, so yeah, you head down into Blighttown.
Oh yeah, they had the spider.
Yeah, that's chick. What the spider chick said. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Cool.
So you spend many hours going down to Blighttown, and one of the harder things about Blighttown is actually getting back out. Because you can kind of circumvent a lot of things by dropping strategically. And but when you climb it back up, you can't skip that much. So you have to kind of deal with all the bullshit going on the way up. And one of my most vivid gaming memories is when I made it out of Blighttown and I saw the sun again. When I stepped outside into familiar ground and the sun was just shining back on me. I remember I just kind of sat there for a minute or two, just kind of looking at the sun and basking in the heat that I couldn't feel. it's crazy because, and I think this is what really makes Dark Souls special. Is that sort of first, it's you playing the game. This is a true RPG in the sense that avatar you see on screen is a representation of you. The way the game controls, the way the story is told, you are sort of just hitting buttons to execute your will upon the world. It's not, it's not like role playing, I'm pretending to be Geralt today. It's just how would you handle the situation? How do you act? Did you fall off that cliff and respond at the nearest bonfire? That's all you. You speak, entirely in first person when describing the actions. And so that it makes it significantly more personal. And everybody has their own NPC they personally get attached to. I got personally attached to Siegmeier. That's the Onion Knight for... Yeah. His story is super rough. Oh my god.
Oh, not the Onion Boy.
So I'll spoil this one just to kind of
The game's been out for
long? I'm gonna spoil his so you have an idea of what a lot of the NPC quest lines are kind of like. So Siegmeier's.
Yeah. Well, because I've never played this game.
Yeah, and lots of people won't because it's super hard. So I don't really mind spoiling it, but it's so you kind of understand. So Siegmeier's a jolly knight. He comes from a land of warriors or whatever, and he is trying to complete some purpose. Now, it's actually been so long that I don't remember what exactly his goal was, but you originally find him standing in front of a gate, and it's locked, and he's just like, I don't know what to do. I've come up against the wall quite literally. Ha ha ha. And so he's this jolly, and he's one of two genuinely jolly people you find, the other being Solaire. And that's another reason why those characters are so beloved is because they're the only light in a fucking dark, dark, terrible world. And so eventually you kind of just keep helping him out. He just keeps getting stuck and you just kind of keep helping him get through. And so eventually he gets a little annoyed a little bit. Because you kind of keep helping him and it's kind of bruising his pride. And there's this one point where you guys get trapped and there's a bunch of weird octopus dudes. And he pretty much wants to sacrifice himself for you. And so he's let me do this for you, friend. And then one of the other great things about Dark Souls is since everything is happening in the world, you can run down there and help him fight. And it's a rough fight. And because there's very little cutscenes. All the cutscenes are just you ringing a bell or something and a door opening. But if someone's I'm going to fight these monsters, they're fighting the monsters. And therefore, you can go in there and help them.
Oh, that is so cool.
And so you can go down there, and if he survives the fight, he seems even more, dejected. And...
Oh, because
you... Yeah, because you saved him again. Because
you didn't think he could do it on his own.
And he wanted to, have his final death be, fighting for you. And so the worst thing is eventually you meet his daughter, and his daughter is looking for him. And eventually you do find him... But he's hollow now. And so he comes to attack you. He's got nothing left. He's just a mindless husk. And I remember I remember locking onto him, and then just kind of holding out my shield and circling for like 4 minutes because I didn't want to kill him.
I'm shocked. Oh my god.
Yeah, it was real rough because like it's also like your fault, but like all you want, you just wanted to help him. I feel like that's like the that could be the tagline for Dark Souls is I just wanted to help. So you were just trying to you didn't want to have your friend die. You didn't want to have him sacrifice himself for you, but like in a weird way.
Yeah, but he lost his home. Yeah.
But in a weird way, I guess, in a weird way, it might have been better for him to die on his own terms. And like that was like, I don't know, that was like the takeaway I got from just like that one quest line is like, you know, maybe living, you know, immortality isn't all what it's chalked up to be, and it might be better to just kind of go out in the way you kind of feel comfortable with. Yeah, and that's just one of many really kind of heavy quest lines that are in Dark Souls, and that's ultimately what elevated it to that kind of like next level for me, and what has stuck with me for so long, and what, you know, the subsequent games really haven't nailed is, you know, the music has gotten better, the combat's gotten, you know, more streamlined and like kind of more fun to play, but like at the same time it's like I never feel as like there's not as much weight in those games. Literally, like Dark Souls 1 plays like, you know, it's got tank controls and it's slow as shit. It's very it's like a strategy game, masked as like a third person action game, and the other ones are just third person action games.
See, how did the game like shape your worldview? I realize I haven't been asking questions, but how did the game, like, through all of that, how did it help like form some of the opinions you have now about purpose? Yeah.
Like, so for the vast majority of my like youth, you know, I was the middle child. I didn't had tons of angst and all that, you know, that comes with the title. Mm-hmm. You know, super meek, super shy, super timid. I just kind of like let everyone make my decisions for me and was just kind of happy with that. I was very happy with just like meagerness.
Like coasting.
Yeah, I was chill with, you know, just coasting through life. And then, you know, I hit my dread phase and then I was just kind of lost, and kind of Dark Souls is kind of what put me back on track to kind of realize that like, my life is what I make of it, and I just start fucking making, you know. that's kind of like the big takeaway I got from it. It was just just kind of gave me a renewed sense of purpose, and it just made me realize that, like, you know, you're not gonna be here forever, and you're definitely not gonna come back as an undead. So, you know, use your time wisely. try not to walk off the cliff. and dodge the boulder.
So yeah, you have anything else you want to like put in about Dark Souls?
Yeah.
Actually, I guess go into the level design a little bit, because you said that it was the first game to take to use. Hold on, I'll get it. Use game mechanics as a story element.
I don't know if I'd say it was the first, but it was like one of the like base example,
one of the iconic ones.
There's a few ways that manifests. Primarily it's through just the idea, like the fact that dying and respawning is part of the story. So like everyone who's known as an undead dies and comes back, usually, except for when you hollow or like other special circumstances. This combined with the environmental storytelling is really what elevates Dark Souls to the next level. So the entire world is crafted. There's very little random loot. the only random loot there is like if you can like kill a specific enemy over and over again and get their armor. But their armor comes with more information about who the person was, or like if it's like a generic enemy, what like this rank of soldier was. And there are specific drops throughout the world, and each one will give you like a little item, and then the item will have a use, but it also have that text, you know, the text that Dark Souls is known for that kind of fills in all the details. But there's even more than that. It's like you'll find the corpse on the wall, you know, kind of strung over the side of the cliff, and you pick up the thing, you kind of figure out like how they died, maybe who even killed them. You'll slowly be walking around, you'll see the stairs kind of like they look like rounded and weathered, and you're like and you hear a noise, and you're like, maybe a boulder will come down here. And there's just like all these like little things that if you just kind of hold your shield up and walk slowly, there's tons of environmental details that tell a greater story than like any cutscene. Like
I definitely feel like there's something to be said for environmental storytelling versus exposition.
Yeah,
it's so much more, it feels more personal. Yeah.
Like it's kind of like in movies where they say show, don't tell. I feel like that same concept works, might even be more so in games because you discover it on your own. Like small details. Like there's this, so Quilog, the lava spider lady that everybody knows about, she has a little sister called the Fair Lady. We don't actually get her name for some reason there, but she's just referred to as the Fair Lady by her little servant guy. And so you can kind of become devoted to her. Another one of the super sad things is that because you kill Quilog, you kind of get some of her essence, and she thinks you're Quilog because she's blind. She's like blind, and I don't know if she's deaf, but she's like blind, and she like, you know, always holds out to her hand for touch and stuff like that. So she can kind of get her essence. So she's telling you, you know, stories and things that she would, you know, telling you like personal stuff that she'd only tell like Quilog and stuff. And so you can kind of devote yourself, and she's like withering and dying. And so you can kind of like devote yourself to her cause and like give her other people's souls to kind of like slowly rejuvenate her. And it's like a very slow process, but you know, eventually her hair starts to get more blonde from its like shriek white that it used to be. And like, you know, she slowly gets healthier. You know, I don't know if she ever gets better, but for Dark Souls, getting a little bit healthier is a pretty good.
That feels like such a deeply personal invasion. Like, yeah, I'm your older sister. You can tell me all your secrets.
Yeah, yeah.
I killed her, but you don't have to know.
Yeah, the weird thing is, I don't know if you can tell her per se. Yeah.
Well, she's not someone that can turn hollow, is she?
I don't actually know if she's undead. Hollow? She might just be. Okay. Yeah, I don't think she's undead. So I think if you kill her, she just dies.
Okay.
I'm currently. sorry, Tiff just tried to feed me a piece of cake.
Okay. Well, we can wrap up so you can go have your cake. Unless there's anything else you want to say about these games. Or this game in particular. Because we should do a follow-up episode about Bloodborne. I think that would be very cool.
Yeah, yeah. Because
I've played that one. And I think it does environmental storytelling.
Dark Souls wasn't like...
really, really well.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. But yeah, so just to kind of wrap it up. Yeah, Dark Souls is hard. You fight a boss, you beat the boss, it feels good. But what elevates it to the next level, and I think what it does better than its subsequent games, is really that the story and the storytelling specifically. It wasn't like my favorite game immediately. Like it had to like I had to sit on it for a while, and I really didn't get other video games and how like little or how much more I expected out of them after playing Dark Souls. Like suddenly I played a bunch of other games. I was just like, huh, there's not really a lot going on here. And then I just kind of sat back and I was like, damn, Dark Souls fucking changed everything. Changed like what I expected out of just games in general, out of like my favorite thing. I didn't really get the vibe as much that like everything was like handcrafted and specifically placed where it was supposed to be in the future games, and the NPCs are super lacking in pretty much all the subsequent ones, even.
Yeah.
You know, even and that was pretty much like my only criticism of Bloodborne, and the only reason I still like Dark Souls more than Bloodborne is even though Bloodborne does pretty much everything else better than Dark Souls, there's nobody to really fall in love with in that game. And
I would beg to differ, but I don't have that Dark Souls background that you do.
Yeah.
So I respect your opinion. And I think if I did have that background, I would agree.
Yeah, and so for me, even though like my brain can say that Bloodborne's a better game, my heart just like can't agree. And definitely in Dark Souls 2 or 3. Bam.
All right. Well, thank you for tuning in to this episode of This Bitch of an Earth. I will link all of Greg's social stuff in, and like anything you want to plug, in the description. And then I'll link my stuff. You can subscribe to us, rate us on iTunes, and we'll see you in 2 weeks with another episode.
See ya.
Bye. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of This Bitch of an Earth. We have a Twitter. It's at TBOAE Podcast. We post our new episodes there, and we do daily good morning tweets. And you can find more of the Lifecast Network's content at the Lifecast.net on Twitter and Instagram. You can find everything I do at nerd.co. And every other link that we think is important is in the show notes on whatever you're listening to this on. In closing, I'd just like to say, suck less, fuck more, howl at the moon, dress in black, worship wholeheartedly.
I just love Dark Souls, man. So sad.